Welcome to The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief. Brought to you by the Chicago Wolves.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Ready for the power play?
You're listening to The Hockey Show
on ESPN Chicago.
Welcome into the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. We are sponsored by the Chicago Wolves. Mike Tsai with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. Hawks in action this afternoon. Play Minnesota at 4 o'clock.
Red hot Minnesota Wild.
Red hot.
Yeah.
Did you see our boy, Ryan Hartman?
Oh, you know I did. You know I did. I love Hartsy and that clip of him. So, obviously, the Binnington. Binnington seems like he might be one of the most hated guys league-wide.
I think he's in the photo.
Yeah. So, and definitely if you're going to have the, starting lineup of most hateable guys, he is for sure the netminder. And so, Hartsy, he loves winding guys up. And if one guy's already half wound like Binnington is, he just pushes him over the edge. And I love the clip. I love the little bit. I wish they would have let Fleury fight him.
Yeah, I do too. And it's funny how, Hartman knew that Binnington was on edge.
Yeah.
And he skates by the official and said, hey, watch it. Jordan's going to take a penalty coming up. He was going to go in front of him. It was after he let in a few goals. He's like, come on.
That was the best part.
I mean, that's the best chirp ever. You cannot answer. He was basically consoling him like he was his teammate.
It was like the most condescending, nothing insult, but like that's exactly, it would have sent me over the moon. I would have been irate if I were Binnington, even if I was me. And it's hard to get me worked up in general. Like I just
really?
Yeah, I don't really, well, a few things aside. I don't like being,
have you listened to this show the last 6 months?
I don't like when I feel like people are being dishonest. So that's the thing that gets me going. But in general, like this is like a thing my mom has always said, like if I would be president of the United States if I had a little bit more of my sister in me. I'm just like, I'll figure it out later. I'll work it out. It'll be fine. Like, everything will be fine. Nothing really gets me going. Nothing really bothers me.
You're more Hartsy, a little Binnington.
I like winding people up, for sure.
Sure.
But in terms of, like, things that actually get me going, not much. But that being like, hey, it'll be all right. After you let in three, I would have been steam coming out of my ears at that point.
All right, so the Hawks back in action this afternoon. Now we had the World Baseball Classic that wrapped up this past week, and played baseball as a kid growing up. I'll jump on the Cubs when they're making a run. I'll watch my fair share of White Sox games as well.
Yep.
I'm in favor of the rule changes that have been made.
I think so, too. I'm with you.
But I thought that was amazing theater. And to see, here's the thing, to see the excitement from the players tells you if it's good or not for the sport in general.
I mean, Lance Lynn was fired up as if it was, Game 7 of the World Series when he was pitching. And so, it was tremendous, and it was best on best. And then, credit to Ohtani, like that guy, and Trout too, but especially Ohtani, like he's never had a playoff moment, and he's with the Angels, he might never have a playoff moment.
Right.
And he is truly one of the games. There hasn't been a guy like him. I was trying to be like, I don't really remember Deion, but it would be like if Deion Sanders was the Hall of Fame corner and a Hall of Fame wide receiver at the same time. Like it seems like there hasn't been an Ohtani since like Babe Ruth.
Right.
So he is a truly
and
special
even,
guy.
Like, he was an okay baseball player. Like, outfield. Like,
yeah, true. Yeah.
He wasn't the Hall of Fame corner that he was in the NFL.
Right. Yeah, so to be able to pitch and just also be like a, an all-star as a field player as well is just incredible. So to see him get to have a big moment with all eyes on him and on the big stage, I thought that was great for the game, and it made me a little jealous.
So, we're all about trying to grow this sport that we love, and we certainly know that the NHL makes its fair share of mistakes. You could even point to their new wardrobe deal coming up.
People hated that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not fans of Fanatics.
Yeah. That's one where I'm like, I think it's
wait and see on that.
I think it's a little bit much ado about nothing. The report that I read was that the exact same facility in Quebec will be manufacturing the jerseys, same as Adidas was. So if you're worried about like quality, which I think there are some legitimate gripes with Fanatics, but I will concede that I don't wear jerseys of any kind, especially not a hockey jersey. I always feel like they look silly, and if you wear it to the game, like if I wear a jersey to the game, there's mustard on the sleeve, like 1,000% of the time. So it's just not, it's not worth it to me. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. I will say that if Adidas, you know, was making money hand over fist selling hockey jerseys, they would have re-upped their rights. But I think there's a reason why the rights keep switching at the end of every contract.
Going back to the WBC, is there something that hockey can learn from that? Is there something that you can say?
They can learn from themselves.
True.
Okay. When I was a little kid, I was 10 years old when they had like a true World Cup of hockey, which was 1996. It is burned into my brain forever. And it happened in the part of the calendar, similar to the equivalent of baseball. I want to say that tournament happened in September, so preseason leading up to the NHL season. And it was Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux and Eric Lindros for Canada. And then United States had, you know, Brett Hull, Tony Amani, Brian Leetch, Mike Richter, Madonna. The only guy, the noticeable guy off there was, there was no Roenick. He had like a contract thing. But Chelios played. It was fantastic. Russia had like the Russian Five from the Wings were on Team Russia. It was some of the best, most hotly contested hockey I have ever seen, with truly a best-on-best situation.
A U.S. won that, right?
They won it.
And Canada was silver.
Second. And that tournament, they had a best of three to determine the final.
Okay.
So Canada won the first game. There was a brawl. Keith Tkachuk fought like everybody. So there was, you know, but there was like basically like a line brawl at the end of the first game. United States had the, you know, they won game two. Game three was up in Canada. The place was absolutely rocking. And then they had the famous, you know, Amonte has broken the tie, the Doc Emmerich call, which is one of my favorite hockey calls ever. And so, yeah, it was, to me, like that was just peak hockey. And, you know, they tried to bring back the World Cup. Then they never did it again.
So they did. 96 was the first.
Mm-hmm.
2004 and 2016.
I don't even remember the 04 one. But
that was right around the lockout.
Yeah.
So
maybe that was part of the issue.
I have no idea.
Yeah. So I don't recall that. But I was at prep school, so we never got any.
Bottom line is. Yeah. Three times since 1996 is not good enough for success.
Right, and it's like, we'll think we'll do it this year.
Yeah, okay? Yeah. So, it's not something you just throw together.
And then I would have this criticism for the World Baseball Classic too, but the last time they did the World Cup, what was the year, the most recent one, say it again?
World Baseball?
Hockey.
2016.
That was the one where they had all the different teams, but then they had like a leftover guys from Europe. So like Anze Kopitar played for like a Team Europe. And then they had a U23 North America team. So you had like Brandon Saad and Connor McDavid and all these like young guys on the team. But it's like, I'd rather just have those guys play for Canada, the United States. And like, let's make this like a truly best on best. I understand the motivation. Like you want more competitive games. Give me Canada beating Latvia 14 to nothing.
Yeah.
And have it like their absolute best guys.
Give me Sydney on the ice with Draisaitl or McDavid or, you know, something like that.
Right.
It wouldn't be Draisaitl.
Yeah. But Germany didn't have their own team, and they probably could now. They could probably field a pretty competitive international senior men's team now with Draisaitl. Our boy Reichel would make that team for sure. And that's a growing hockey nation. But I'd rather just be like, hey, like we're going to. So some of the games are going to be blowouts, and that's a thing in every sport and every competition. Some of the games are just blowouts. So you see that in the World Junior, doesn't mean you should combine, you know, Germany, Switzerland, and Latvia. Like just let them play for themselves, and if they have a special moment,
you wouldn't have a European team.
No, let them.
Czech Republic will have its own team.
Sure, yeah, and you know, if they get steamrolled, then so be it. That's the way sports work.
Right,
and you'll still get fantastic highlights, maybe more. That will, especially in today's age, where you might have McDavid skating through five guys from Latvia without any issue and have a spectacular goal. And I feel like I'm bagging on Latvia pretty hard. But I think that could be a better tournament. You get the best 8 to 10 countries that play hockey, and let's have it in September.
So the World Cup of Hockey was organized by the NHL and the NHLPA. First of all, the buy-in needs to happen from the commissioner.
Yeah.
Gary Bettman needs to be on board. We saw Connor McDavid asked about it after the WBC title game the other night. And he's like, this is what we've been asking for at the bargaining table the last few times. We want the stage. They like going to the Olympics. Now, I'm not saying the Olympics is a perfect situation.
It's not.
You know, in season. I'm with you. I'd like this played the last 2 weeks in September, leading, and, you know, those guys would not need to, you know, participate in the four exhibition games or whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
It, you know, like, somehow time it a little bit with the start of the NHL season, the second week in October.
Yep.
Play it the last couple weeks in September. Play it in North America. Make it easy on the NHL players. That's really
totally,
you know, who you're trying to entice to participate.
I would,
and that's what's going to make it better.
I would be fine if they played it in Sweden too, because then you, I,
or maybe one, yeah,
yeah.
That's, I think that's how they did it in '96. I think there was
like a Euro bracket,
a Euro bracket, and then the North American bracket,
I think
and then they brought everybody over for the later rounds.
Yeah, for like the playoff rounds. But I loved the like when the World Junior is over in Europe. I like that better than when it's in North America, because I'm already, there's already plenty of programming on at 7 o'clock at night for these big games. I love turning on it. I wake up at 6 a.m. and I'll watch Finland against Slovakia at 6 a.m. Like I would love to have that. And then you're the only show in town for those morning slots. You're going to have great games. So if you want to rotate it back and forth, I'm fine with that too. And they're doing more and more of those NHL playing in Sweden, Germany, Great Britain. They're trying to get the game over there more. This is a very easy solution to get the best players playing in those markets, and people would love it.
So more on that. How can the NHL build their brand? How can they grow the sport of hockey? Do they have to steal a page from baseball? Which is weird to say to begin with, that when you're stealing.
No one has ever said that.
No, I think it's the first time it's been said. We'll talk about a few other things. Give me a Lucas Reichel evaluation. You've seen him now 11 straight games in this stint. We'll get Chief's thoughts on that. Ian Mitchell, does it look like it's the end of the road for him here in Chicago? And we touched on it a little bit last week. How do you think the Jonathan Toews situation will play out? It's all coming up next. It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Rolling on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Barstool Chief Pat Boyle with you each and every Saturday right here on ESPN 1000. We are sponsored by the Chicago Wolves. Tonight, it's hockey night in Chicago. The Wolves taking on the Rockford Ice Hogs one last time at Allstate Arena as the rivalry continues. The Wolves have been one of the AHL's hottest teams over the last month. And next Saturday, April 1st, at 7 o'clock at Allstate, the first 5,000 fans at the game will receive a pack of Chicago Wolves trading cards, courtesy of Vienna Beef. You can check out tickets at chicagowolves.com for more. How have you been doing as far as looking at where the Blackhawks are in the Bedard sweepstakes in the lot? Is it a daily thing?
I got like finger cramps.
Finger cramps.
Finger cramps from clicking around, looking at the standings, clicking on Tankathon. I'm doing it. It's like become, you know, you just have part of your like morning routines.
Yes.
Where you just kind of, I check Twitter, I check scores from last night, I check my bets, and then I go to Tankathon. Even though it doesn't matter at all, I still, like, out of just sheer force of habit, I'm on there basically every single day.
So I've gotten to the point now where I'm looking at Columbus's remaining games, San Jose's remaining games, and of course seeing how that stacks up with the Blackhawks.
You got like a BCS strength of schedule thing going
on? Pretty much. Right. And it's what are the winnable games? That's really what it comes down to. So let's just go over the Hawks. At Minnesota today.
Should be a loss.
Home to Vancouver tomorrow.
That's a toss-up.
They've been playing better.
They have. They've 7 wins in their last 10 for Vancouver. But yeah.
Home Tuesday against Dallas. Should be a loss. Home against St. Louis. That one's kind of a coin flip for me.
Yeah, St. Louis has been playing. They went through a run where they're like, we're like one of those horses that are closing down the stretch, kind of trying to get Bedard. But they're playing a little bit better as of late. They got a little spunk in them. You know, we talked about Binnington and Hartsey. Like that, I feel like they still have like that right kind of culture. where they're gonna compete.
Okay, we'll put it as a possible.
That's a toss up. Yeah.
All right, then it's New Jersey.
That should be a loss.
Then they go on the road for three straight at Calgary, at Van, at Seattle.
I'll probably lose two out of three.
That's what I'm thinking. So they'll get one win there. And then for the last three games, it's home to Minnesota.
L.
Should be a loss. At Pittsburgh, depending on where Pittsburgh's at.
You would think that they would need the points.
Yeah,
they
had so a big hopefully win that's a Colorado loss. And then home against Philadelphia.
Philly was another team, or they are a team that's like closing down the stretch. Nobody's tanking better than the San Jose Sharks. They lost seven in a row, and just when you think they're going to get a win, they're the team that finds a way to lose games. So they could very well end up. They're currently in the two slot.
Right. So let me give you San Jose's. They're at Calgary, Winnipeg, Vegas, at Arizona. So at Arizona is a possible win for them, right?
Yeah, but Arizona's been playing well. I mean, they've lost two in a row, but they've been playing pretty well.
They play back-to-back games against Colorado. Should be losses. Edmonton, Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton.
Those sound like all losses to me. I'm sure they'll get one somewhere in there, maybe Calgary, but they're a bad team. So I feel like those are the types of teams where San Jose doesn't really defend, and those teams love to get up and down. So I feel like if those teams turn into track meet, they're toast.
All right. So we've got two winnable games for San Jose in that final 11 or 12. For Columbus, and this is where we need Brad Larson to channel his inner Lovey Smith.
Yeah.
They're at Montreal today.
That could be a win.
They are at the New York Rangers.
That should be a loss.
At Boston, loss. Home to Florida.
Maybe Patrick Kane can be our Lovey Smith.
That would be true. That'd be nice. Home to Florida.
Loss. Florida's been playing pretty well.
Home to Ottawa. I can't figure that team out.
You just never know. Throw it. Sometimes they look incredible.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. And then the other times it's like the game against the Hawks where they lost 5-0. It's like, what are you guys doing?
So let's give
them. That's a toss-up.
We'll give them a possible there. At Toronto, at New Jersey, home to the Rangers. Those should be losses.
Yeah, I think San Jose had New Jersey too. New Jersey is one of those teams that they just lay an egg every once in a while too. So
that's
you just never really know with them.
Then they've got the Rangers, their final three, Philly, Pittsburgh, Buffalo. This is where Larson becomes Lovey.
Yeah.
Because Philly and Buffalo could be wins.
Yeah.
I mean, they all could be losses.
They could all be losses too, but also like
I mean, at least it's these guys at least they're not playing.
They're not going to lose 12 in a row.
Right.
Like that just doesn't happen. But Philly, Philly's not exactly trying to win either. So Buffalo's kind of too far away to get in that race. But Philly's been terrible, terrible.
If I liked your poll question that you put out earlier this week, and in case you missed it, follow him at Barstool Chief. If I guaranteed you that you'd get the number two pick in the draft, but no chance at Bedard, and also no chance of falling to third, fourth, fifth, or sixth, would you take it? And the choices were yes, give me Fantilli, or no, roll the dice.
At this moment, it's 56% of the public are taking Fantilli.
I think that's where I am too.
Because I don't want to be in a situation where you're picking four and the clear and obvious choice is based on talent at that spot would be Mitchkov, but he's such a wild card because you don't know when or if maybe ever he's coming over. So then it's like, do you have this shot at like a top player who know the Blackhawks will probably be at the top of the draft next year too, but can you gamble taking one of these prize picks on a guy who won't be here until 2027 or if at all? Like you just to me you can't. So then
I mean that really. It takes your rebuild and puts it more than the pause button. I mean, it puts you
totally
now behind almost a couple years.
You need star players.
Yeah.
You need these guys. If you're picking at the top,
you need to hit on this one. This one can't be Kirby Doc.
No. And I was talking to somebody at our office about the rebuild. And it's like, I really like the way the prospect pool is coming together. I think Davidson and his team have done a really good job identifying these guys with, I would call it a high floor. They're smart, they're fast, they work hard, Sam Lafferty, Brandon Hagel type guys. I feel like they have a handful of guys like that. You can't win in the NHL unless you get a franchise, a Nate McKinnon, a Connor McDavid, a Patrick Kane, a Jonathan Taylor. You can't win without those types of players. Every single team that wins has them. And if you don't get them in the draft, it's almost impossible to get them any other way. So they have to find the guy in this draft to be that kind of a guy. And if they slip to, I really think if they slip to three, that becomes in question. I think Leo Carlson will be a very nice player. I think there's a significant gap between Fantilli and Carlson.
And I cannot fault with, I mean, they have played this hand perfectly, in my opinion, Kyle Davidson. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they've identified the type of player that they want. And I mean, and maybe they found just a bunch of hungry guys. Like, to me, I use the example of the Vegas Golden Knights when they entered the league.
Yeah.
And they kind of built that team with a lot of cast-offs that were in the final year of their deals, maybe had 2 years max.
Led the league and chips on their shoulder.
Chips on their shoulder. Yeah. And I think a lot of if you look at the Blackhawks roster.
High character.
Yeah. And my question the other night was, okay, so what brings out the best in a player? Is it fighting for a playoff spot or is it fighting for your job? And I think the answer more times than not is fighting for your job. And I think most of these guys are fighting for their NHL futures, and that's why you're seeing this honest effort every night. I mean, not only is San Jose and Columbus losing, they're getting blown. You know,
smoked.
You're like, first period, it's 4-0. You're like, all right, well, that's a loss.
Yeah.
I mean, the Hawks,
well, this is
they're
like,
in every game.
Yeah. Right? Well, this is like my, I call it the formula to make it sound smart, but all I do is parlay like the heavy favorites in a hockey game after the deadline. And I never include the Hawks in that. It's not because I don't want to bet against them, but it's like you can't trust them to be as bad as they should be. If that makes sense.
Yes.
So because they just work hard, and if Staylock keeps playing the way he's playing, then they're going to be in a lot of games, a bounce here, a bounce there, and it's all of a sudden they win 3-2, and you're like, this is, you want to pull your hair out.
At the end of the day, if they don't get the one or the two pick, it's going to come down to Alex Staylock probably put them in the 3, 4, or 5 spot. Because, I mean, I would say he's won them at least 3 games. And totally. He's probably picked them up 4 or 5 loser points.
Yeah, I hate this guy.
But he's another great guy, too.
No, I'm sure
he was on a 1-year deal.
No, I love him.
And like when he was out of the lineup, they were tanking. Mm-hmm. When he's in the lineup, everybody's energy level's up. He's feisty.
Well, let me ask you this. This would never happen. Staylock's 35 years old.
Right.
Would you be like, hey, Alex, we need you to chill. Well, if you just play how we wink wink want you to play, we'll give you a 2-year deal.
You're
at least the backup through the rest of the rebuild. You got 2 more years of playing hockey. Just maybe let a few in, all right?
Yeah. Well, your solution to that is playing Khudobin more.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I'm not gonna put it on a guy to go out there.
I know, I'm joking.
But I know you are.
Yeah.
But so I think they've played this hand is about as well as you can play it.
Yeah.
So I'm not gonna fault them for like, oh, why did they put that team? How do you subtract 5 starters at the trade deadline?
And you get better.
And you're in last in scoring, and you've gotten better. How does that happen?
It's infuriating.
And with no power play.
They probably have.
Like, you have a, if you put your skates on now, I would put you on the second power play unit of the Chicago Blackhawks.
I got a bomb from that little left dot spot there. So
you got a little Debrinket spot?
Yeah, as long as you don't make me, like, move, I would be fine.
Giving you the last 20 seconds.
Yeah, that's fine. That's all my lungs can do, probably.
All right, coming up next, we will talk to Blackhawks insider from NBCSportsChicago.com. We'll talk a little bit about how he thinks Jonathan Toews' future will play out here in Chicago. Get the latest on Lucas Reichel in his latest stint with the Blackhawks. Charlie Romeliotis joins The Hockey Show next on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
On the AM.
At 1000.
On the FM.
At 100.3 HD2.
On your phone.
Through the ESPN Chicago app.
Rolling on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. Blackhawks in action this afternoon at Minnesota as they finish up their road trip. It's a 3:30 pregame show on NBC Sports Chicago. You will also see our Blackhawks insider on that show. He's the one and only Charlie Romeliotis. How you doing today, Charlie?
What's up, boys? Not too bad. How we doing?
We're doing all right. You know, we started the show kind of with a big picture story after watching the World Baseball Classic and how much fun the participants were having and how that kind of carried over to fan bases and the ratings. And then we saw even Connor McDavid asked about it earlier in the week. Does the NHL need to take a page away from MLB and create their version of the WBC and do something like they did the World Cup of Hockey back in 1996 to generate more excitement in this game and get the stars on the same sheet of ice and playing together?
Yeah, definitely. I think the frustrating thing as a hockey fan is that there have been two opportunities for the NHL, or I guess for hockey, to get best on best. It's World Cup of Hockey and it's the Olympics. And obviously the preference is to get them back to the Olympics because that's when the stage is at its highest and you're getting the most eyeballs. But at this point, I mean, I will just settle for the World Cup of Hockey. I mean, we got the announcement in November that the NHL wasn't going to have a World Cup of Hockey in 2024. And I think there were some concerns, obviously, with the Russia invasion of Ukraine and at the time. But it also just feels like any time the NHL and the NHLPA are talking about a World Cup of Hockey, there's always a negotiation. It's like, okay, we'll have a World Cup of Hockey, but you have to give up something, right? So, like, I'm just, I guess as a hockey fan at heart, you just get tired of it always having to be a negotiation and just, how about it's good for the sport either way when both sides are putting best on best together.
I would agree. I feel that a lot lately. It's like, don't you care about me? Don't you care about me, the fan? Like, all I want to do is just enjoy watching hockey. And there are, I feel like the league and certain teams make it very, very difficult on a lot of different levels. So you would bring it back, and you had a comment, I stumbled over my own words there, but you had a comment being like the ideal is the Olympics, which I actually agree, but why is that an ideal from your perspective, the player's perspective? Because I feel like its owners are never really on board with that.
Yeah, I think the owners are never on board with it, obviously, because it interferes with the season. But I think as a hockey fan, in the winter, that's when it's peak interest. Like, I remember when they did the World Cup of Hockey in 2016, and it was great, but it was right before the season. So it was like there was college football, there was NFL. Like, it just kind of flew under the radar, and really the diehard fans were tuning in, but it just didn't get the spotlight that it probably deserves. And maybe the alternative, too, like if we're talking about Olympics, is doing it in the summer. But, you know, I guess I'll settle for that, but it just feels like there's a lot going on in the summer, too, that's not the primary. Like, I think of the World Juniors, how it got pushed to the summer. Like, the interest was just not there, even in Canada, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the winter time is just such a perfect time to do it from a interest perspective. But clearly, obviously, the owners feel that it's disrupting the season, so the players have to give up something to do it.
Yeah, but I think back to that 2014, and where that game against Russia was on at 6 in the morning, Chicago time, and TJ Oshie was a household name. To me, there is some inherent value to the league in a relative, if you're a diehard hockey fan, you knew who TJ Oshie was, but I mean, he was on Good Morning America and The View and all these places.
It was Sochi, and they were calling it the Ochi Olympics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like you just have to have, it doesn't, it's one of those things where it's like, you know what, let's just roll the dice. And let's have an event that people will like, people will watch, and we're not going to worry what the accountants have to say.
How about we steal a page from golf? And while we all love the Ryder Cup, they also have the President's Cup. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's not the Ryder Cup, but it ain't that bad.
Yeah.
And so maybe on Olympic years, you push your Olympic agenda, and on the odd year, you play that World Cup of Hockey, and you do it in the last. We were picking the last 2 weeks in September. Yeah, it's not ideal, But it's right before the start of the NHL season. You can give those guys a break. They're not going to go to training camp. They're not going to be upset about that. Mm-hmm. They're not going to play in the meaningless exhibition game at Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. And you let them go on that stage. And look, we saw it the other day. I was never a fan of NASCAR having their biggest race at the start of the season. But after I watched the WBC and how it was played at that level, I was kind of impressed. I think it could play out in hockey as well.
And I do, and again, I have my childhood goggles on here. That 96 one, that worked. And I do think if you get, if you do a thing like how soccer does it, where you have the World Cup every 4 years, and that's obviously the biggest one. The European Championships and the CONMEBOL down in South America, all these different regional tournaments that they do on the, like you're saying, like kind of split the difference. Those get a ton of eyeballs too. And I feel like there's a way we can have our cake and eat it too. And you know, and it's like, we sacrificed a little for the Olympics, but it got a lot of people interested in these international competitions. We'll make that money back up with the World Cup in 2 years. And right. I feel like there's a way to make that work.
Right. And I like the idea of doing it right before the season because it really doesn't interfere with the players because they're going to be ramping up at that time anyway. So mm-hmm. if anything, it just gets them ready for the season. Like I think of the only thing, the closest thing we have right now is the Worlds, but it's always at the end of the season. It's in May. And so there are some teams that are playing in the playoffs. And then when other players, when their seasons end, it's like they just played an 82 game schedule. Yeah, like they want their bodies to heal. And then if you go over there, it just delays the off season. So it's just, I agree. I think that the middle ground is doing it in September, which the World Cup of Hockey did in 2016.
Yeah. And the guys who, I mean, they always play, you know, with when they have that USA or Canada across their chest, there's an element of pride, but those guys treat that tournament like vacation. We're gonna have a paid vacation, totally. And it's gonna be, you know, kind of shinny hockey and just a good time, and we'll go out to the bars and restaurants, you know, night before games and sightsee and bring our girlfriends, and that's not like a real tournament, and that's not best on best because the best guys typically are on their way to the Stanley Cup final.
Exactly.
Yep.
And that's
yep.
what we're trying. We're trying to get the best players on the bigger stage.
We're just trying to give Connor McDavid what he wants.
I want to see Kane and Matthews. I want to see Crosby and McDavid together. Like we haven't gotten that. It's crazy because, I mean, how long have Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid been in the league for now? They have not 16. Put on the third. I mean, it's insane.
It's malpractice.
I think this is some big conspiracy by Hockey Canada because as soon as the United States started having real all-star type centers, we can't play in the Olympics anymore. That was always what was missing from USA. Kane was passing to who? Maybe Ryan Kessler if he was lucky. Put him with Austin Matthews. We can compete against anybody.
And
they got the better goaltenders too.
That's true too.
We're going to get Chiefs conspiracy theories sponsored next year. three a show.
I got like the Charlie Kelly board from Always Sunny where I'm just tying all these things together at all times.
Let's transition a little bit to the Blackhawks here. We're with Charlie Romeliotis, NBC Sports Chicago, Blackhawks insider. We've seen Lucas Reichel now for the longest stint of consecutive games. What do you make of what you've seen from Lucas this time around?
Yeah, well, the one thing, even dating back to the last stint that he had when Kane went down with that injury and he got that extended look finally on the top line, and the one thing that stands out to me is I like him better on the wing. I know he's been playing center in Rockford, and he got drafted as a winger, so it's not like I have this strong opinion that he's playing out of position. Like, he's naturally a winger. I like that he has developed as a center because he's, you know, it gives him those defensive instincts, but at the NHL level, like, you can see he's much more effective on the wing. He's flying on the ice. He looks confident. And the one thing that Luke Richardson has said that he's liked over the last few weeks here, I guess, with Lucas Reichel is he's not afraid to get bodied. Like, he's obviously a smaller guy, but he's not shying away from some of those physical areas now, or at least maybe take a hit to make a play. And I think that's the encouraging part about his game that I've seen as of late.
Yeah, this is a story. I was out one time and saw him at a restaurant. A bunch of the Blackhawks were out, and I was out with my friend White Sox Dave from Barstool, And Dave doesn't know anything about hockey. He saw Lucas Reichel. He's like, I can make him into a center fielder. Like, he just looks like an athlete. And you're right. Like, he takes contact well. What do you think his ceiling is, Charlie? Is he going to be a guy that you want on your first line when the team's good?
I see him more as a second line guy. I don't want to say a complimentary piece, but I don't know. Like, I think he would be better suited if, especially if the Blackhawks land at, you know, a top three pick in this year's draft, and Frank Nazar ends up being a player. Like, I think they'll be able to have some interchangeable pieces on their top six, but I think he would probably be best suited on the second line and then getting, you know, top power play time where he's getting into that 17, 18, 19 minutes a night range.
Could he be a Teuvo Teravainen? Could that be the type of player is ultimately?
Yeah, that's a good comparable where he's maybe teetering on, like, core player and complementary, right? There's kind of like in between that. Like, maybe he's not the total building block for the Blackhawks, but he's got that potential where he can certainly be a difference maker for the Blackhawks if you surround him with the right pieces.
Yeah, we talked about this before, Pat, too. And if you look at Teuvo, his career high for points is 76. That's a ton of points. If Reichel was in that kind of 60-point range, I think that's a nice number, nice expectation for a guy with his skill set. And I think Teuvo has a better bag of tricks. Like, I think he's got an electric shot. Yeah. But it hasn't really translated because I don't think that, like you talked about, Charlie, Reichel's not exactly shy out there anymore. So I think that maybe the total package and his willingness to compete at a higher level than Teuvo does consistently, I think being a complimentary player, getting 60 points in a well-rounded game, you know, that doesn't sound too dissimilar. Different styles, obviously, but not too dissimilar from a guy named Patrick Sharp, who might be insulted if I called him a complimentary player, but that's what he was on those teams. So that's I think you're right. I think a second-line wing, guy that you can slide up and down, he's got a lot to like there.
Yeah, it feels like he's got a little bit more speed to him than maybe we realized. Like,
yeah.
He's really fast. And obviously, that's something that we knew that it was kind of in his arsenal when he got drafted. But he's like sneaky, sneaky fast. So that's something you like too about his game.
All right, we're all watching the seven prospects that the Blackhawks have, at least when the NCAA Frozen Four tournament started earlier in the week. But I want to talk to you about some prospects that are in juniors. And Chief and I are bullish on Kevin Korchinski. A lot to like there from the first round pick on the back end in Seattle. What have you seen from Korchinski?
Yeah, so first off, I look at that 2022 draft class for the Blackhawks, and I don't think there's one prospect that's having a bad year. Like, all of them are really having strong years wherever they are in college or junior. So I think, one, that's really encouraging. But two, the guy that they obviously traded Alex DeBrincat for is to get the number 7 overall pick, and it was Kevin Korchinski. And he's legitimately been one of the best defensemen in the WHL with 69 points in 53 games going into this final weekend stretch here. He ranks third among defensemen in the WHL in points per game. So he's really elevated his game, and he's creating a lot of chances for his team. So that's a guy that's really taken a significant step in his development at such a young age for Chicago, which I'm sure you like to see.
How about Gavin Hayes, who they took, I think, in the third round of that draft?
Yeah, so no Blackhawks prospect. I think the Blackhawks have, if you look at elite prospects, it's like they have 49 guys in the system. No prospect has more points than him, which is kind of crazy to think about. Obviously, he's a big-time goal scorer that you're seeing, but the amount of points he's producing, too, as well, he's gotten really, really hot of late. And I think what's noteworthy is he was the third-round pick that the Blackhawks acquired from Montreal in the Kirby Dach draft. So we always kind of look at, well, how is Frank Nazar going to perform, and like, is he going to be better than Kirby Dach? But like, the Blackhawks also got this guy named Gavin Hayes, who he compared himself to Blake Wheeler at the NHL draft. Like, if the Blackhawks turn out to have,
that'd be nice.
Two really take players, that. Yeah, you absolutely take that. So Gavin Hayes, like, he's a guy that kind of like a little hidden gem there with the Blackhawks. I don't want to say it was a throw-in third round pick, but I mean, it was the Blackhawks essentially got another pick for Kirby Dach, and this guy could turn out to be a really good player.
Tell me about this. We'll switch to college quickly. This upstanding young gentleman named Aiden Thompson from University of Denver.
Yeah, so I was talking to someone from the USHL last year with the Lincoln Stars, and he was like, that guy was the fastest player in the league. And now he's obviously playing in college, and he's been one of the best freshmen in the country. And so I think, again, like another third-round pick that the Blackhawks, you know, he's taken a significant step in his development. So you look up and down the draft class, and like every single player feels like they are taking a legitimate step, and Aiden Thompson is certainly one of those guys that has.
Let's talk about a guy who went to DU, University of Denver, Ian Mitchell, and kind of, I think we've talked about it on our podcast, Charlie. There's a lot to like about him as a person, and I think he has a skill set, but I just don't see it fitting in with this current regime and what they look for in a defenseman. How do you see it?
Yeah, I agree. And it's gotten honestly to the point where I think both sides would probably welcome a fresh start at this point. I think Ian probably understands that he was not drafted by this regime, and he's probably seeing all the defensemen that are coming in or that the Blackhawks are bringing in, and it's Jared Tenorti and it's the Andreas Englunds, all these big physical defensemen. And Ian just doesn't fit that mold, which is totally fine. We saw it last year with Dylan Strome, where he's a really good player, but the Blackhawks transitioned into wanting speed-type players. So what happens? Dylan goes to Washington, where it's a much better fit for him, and he's producing there, and it's been a really nice fit. So I think Ian definitely has a future in the NHL, but it's probably not here in Chicago.
Yeah, I would agree. It's unfortunate, and it's you know, a philosophy thing where if you look at Luke Richardson and the types of defensemen they bring in, they could all wear his suit jacket. You know, they're all kind of like built like him, and so he probably has a preference, and that's his prerogative, and I don't necessarily disagree with him. But Mitchell's a guy that I'll root for forever. He's a nice boy, and another guy that he personality-wise kind of reminds me of is that Trevor Van Riemsdyk, where people were ready to kind of cast him aside, and he probably would have had 1,000 games in his career if not for COVID. He just signed another contract. So I hope Mitchell ends up on a similar career arc as TVR.
Yeah, I agree. And he's one of my favorite guys to talk to in the locker room. So it's very fitting that he probably won't be here beyond this year, because it feels like the Blackhawks get rid of all the guys that I gravitate towards. So maybe
Frankie Nazar is coming for you.
All right. So maybe I should not gravitate towards Frankie Nazar.
Last one for me, Charlie. Jonathan Toews. We know he's been dealing with the chronic immune response syndrome, the long COVID. We're running out of runway here. We're less than 3 weeks into the season. I don't want to put you on the spot of like how you think this is going to play out, because
I'll do it. Charlie, okay. How's this going to play out?
How's it going to play out?
Well, I mean, if the Blackhawks get back from this road trip and we get word that Jonathan Toews is still not on the ice, I just don't see how he's coming back. I mean, he's going to need so much time to just get ramped up back up, you know, just getting on the ice, skating, but then taking some contact and getting back into the conditioning. So, like, I just don't know. I don't see a path for him to play this season. And obviously then that begs the question, like, what does the future hold for him? And, you know, if he is contemplating retirement, I feel like he is probably both mentally and physically exhausted probably from dealing with all this, right? It's not just his body telling him to quit. I think he's just tired of mentally trying to overcome that, right? So I think that's just disappointing too, because you always want to see players go out on their own terms. And I'm not quite sure if we'll see that here. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but that's probably where things stand as of this current moment.
Yeah, his last home game would be April 13th. That is my birthday. I hope Johnny, and his birthday is right around that time too. I can't remember exactly. One more skate for the
Chiefy boy.
Then I can just close the book and just be an adult after that.
So please wear your 19 jersey for that.
I don't have one, unfortunately. Right. Like I said, not a jersey guy, but maybe I would probably get one just for that, because you're right, Charlie, and I've said the same thing. Like it kind of breaks my heart a little bit that if this is the end, like this is not what he deserves.
Yeah, and it's disappointing too, because the Blackhawks really didn't. They weren't able to give Patrick Kane a little send-off either, right? He just got shut down on that road trip.
I'm not going to.
And then, like, you know, how many fans bought tickets on that March 2nd game thinking that was going to be the last game? And then that was actually one of their better crowds of the year, and the 88 wasn't on the ice. So yep.
He gave them a pretty good send-off against Vegas.
That goal counted.
That goal counted as far as Chiefs concerned.
Counted,
and it's going to make the highlight reel. It's going to be the only non-goal that makes his highlight reel.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure if it made it better that we knew that that wasn't the last game, because maybe we were just able to appreciate it, whether it's, you know, if we knew that it was going to be his last home game. But I also feel like we had an idea, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough.
Chief did
being 88-19 like this.
All right, Charlie, great stuff as always. We'll be looking for you later this afternoon on Blackhawks pregame live as the Hawks get ready to take on the Wild. Thanks for doing this, Charlie.
Thanks, Charlie.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Back to wrap up the Hockey Show after this.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
Call us or tweet your comments to @ESPN1000. The Hockey Show.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 with Barstool Chief. I'm Pat Boyle. We're sponsored by the Chicago Wolves. Thanks to Eric Ostrowski. Does it all here at ESPN 1000. Honcho's all White Sox things, and he helped us out today on the Hockey Show. We always appreciate that. And Chief, we're not going to be on next Saturday, but look for us on the ESPN Chicago app, because I think we're going to do some podcasts, you and I, over the next few weeks.
Talk about what's going on in the Frozen Four, trying to put a little bow on this delightful season. I've enjoyed doing the show, even though the hockey talk has been, the hockey team that we're covering has been a little rough, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, there have been storylines there. Obviously, the Kane Taves thing almost all season was a storyline.
Yep.
I wonder what next year is going to look like, and I think a lot of it depends on this tankathon thing that I'm staring at.
Yep.
By the way,
it again.
Let me try it. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Down one again.
I went down two.
I don't know what the algorithm is. I don't know if tankathon knows.
Are you starting to get worried that I've penetrated your brain? Now you're thinking it's an algorithm.
You're moving up. I've had more luck with like Detroit and Vancouver and St. Louis, teams that are, you know, 8, 9, 10 moving north to number one, than I've had the Blackhawks going from 3 to 1.
When I see Philly, Detroit, St. Louis move up, it sends like a shiver down my spine.
It does.
Yeah.
Because if you feel like this was all for naught, like
you
endured this. Again, there have been some things to like along the way.
Totally.
But by and large.
Well, the goal isn't to be the Winnipeg Jets or the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, it's not to be close and lose close games. That's not the goal.
Let's win one round. I mean, if you wanted to just lose one round, you could have kept Hagel, Strom, DeBrinket, Doc, all these guys, and you probably just get in the playoffs and lose in the first round. So to go through all this pain, not to mention a guy named Patrick Kane, not to go through all this pain just to end up where you started, that would be tough. That would be a tough pill for me to swallow.
It'd be very tough.
Yeah.
All right, so we won't be on next week, but look for us in podcast form on ESPN Chicago app. That's going to do it for this edition of The Hockey Show. For Barstool Chief, I'm Pat Boyle. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.